Ask the Doctor is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare.
Good afternoon. Welcome to
our Ask the Experts weekend continues with Ask the Doctor. Ask the Doctor. Brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. To ask a question, give us a call at 340-1045.
All right. Welcome to Ask the Doctor with St. Vincent's Healthcare. I'm WOKV's Gene Wexler. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. I'm seeing 66 degrees in downtown Jacksonville, 57 degrees at the beaches. Our guest today is Dr. Raymond Pumarejo with St. Vincent's Healthcare, specifically St. Vincent's Lung, Sleep, and Critical Care Physicians. Welcome, Dr. Raymond.
Welcome.
How are you today?
Thank you.
Dr. Raymond Pumarejo, we are going to be talking about one of my favorite topics today, which is sleep. It's the only thing I could do for 8 hours and then want to do for another 8 hours right after that. That's my one sleep joke. I just had to get that out of the way. We are live today, 340-1045. If you'd like to be a part of the program and ask a question, we are live today. There's so many topics to get into with sleep. My question for you, where should we start? There's so many topics.
I think one of the ones that's probably getting a lot of attention over the last several months and it's very important, is sleep deprivation. And sleep deprivation can have a basis on a disorder of sleep, and that's what a lot of times we work in this sleep clinic. But the sleep deprivation can also be caused by things such as poor sleep hygiene or not dealing well with your sleep habits. And that's one of the things that we can have an impact on. I think understanding what sleep deprivation can do to you and your health will probably motivate you to be more proactive with your sleep.
So what is the definition of sleep deprivation? So how little do you need to get to be depriving yourself?
The human body requires a minimum amount of sleep to maintain bodily functions. Is it as important as your nutrition and your oxygen and gas intake? You're looking at, depending on the age of the patient, there are different needs. As babies require many hours of sleep to take care of their needs, their body needs. As we get older, those needs go down. But I think for adults, if we think about 7 to 9 hours of sleep is a good target to realize that will take care of most of the needs that you need and will probably keep you healthy. Obviously, assuming that there are no other disorders affecting the quality of those 7 to 9 hours of sleep.
7 to 9. So when you're talking about disorders that could affect it, do you mean, you know, things that would prevent you from getting the deep REM sleep or insomnia, things like that?
Many of the disorders of sleep will affect the integrity of your sleep cycle, and that will take away some of the slow wave sleep or REM sleep, which is the type of sleep that rests your body and promotes good health. If you're dealing with sleep apnea, which is very common and everybody knows about it, that clearly fragments your sleep, and you don't get that you are always a light sleeper, never get to the deeper forms of sleep. But things such as simple as chronic pain, insomnia, and as I said before, sleep hygiene. You know, our ability to take away, give the importance of sleep that we should, and take away some of the many aspects of our lives that will compete with our sleep.
Well, Dr. Pumarejo, you touched on sleep apnea there. I think this would be a good time to take our first caller, Darren. Darren, you say you have problems with sleep apnea, is that correct?
Well, not so much anymore. I did a sleep study test a year ago, and they determined I had sleep apnea, and I've got a machine, and I use it every night. I really can't sleep without it now.
Uh-huh. Do you have a question for Dr. Pumarejo about it?
Not so much that. Well, yeah, that. I mean, even before I had my sleep apnea, my CPAP machine, I have no problem getting to sleep. Go to sleep within 10, 15 minutes. But after about 3.5, 4 hours, even with using the CPAP machine, I wake up, you know, and then it kind of seems like it's harder to get back to sleep with that. And another side note, about 10 years ago, I had a chest infection. It was called empyema. A doctor probably knows what that is, but they had to pretty much cut me open and clean a bunch of infected fluid and stuff out of my chest and around my right lung. And if I get to breathing real hard, the rib cage on the right side where they did the operation at, it hurts real bad, and it's always sensitive no matter what. I mean, if it was just a light punch in that right rib cage, and you know, I had to go down. I was just wondering what he thought about that.
Darren, you pointed on something that's clearly one of the things that we see with sleep apnea is that your sleep is fragmented, and you're not going through the standard cycles of lighter sleep through slow wave sleep and then REM sleep that we should be doing through the night. And as a consequence, you wake up with minor issues, sounds, pain, going to the bathroom, and then it's difficult to go back to sleep. So that's called comorbid insomnia. That's what we see often with sleep apnea. Your other point is chronic pain. If you have any condition such as what you describe, having had surgery in your chest to relieve an empyema, that in itself, the chronic pain can be a factor that affects the quality of your sleep. So we often, in the sleep clinic, we address those issues. We try to make sure that your primary care provider, your lungs doctor, or your pain doctor addresses pain in a proper way so that you can sleep soundly.
Okay. All right. Do y'all address all three of those at your place?
Pardon? Can you repeat that?
He wants to know if you address all of them at St. Vincent's.
Yes. Yeah, we often, since we're lung and sleep physicians, we often deal with respiratory issues, lung issues, at the same time as we're dealing with your sleep apnea. That's part of the because if you only address one of the two, you're not going to be doing a good job with taking care of the sleep.
All right. Thanks for the call, Darren. That's Darren from Jacksonville calling in 340-1045. If you'd like to be a part of the program, it's Ask the Doctor with St. Vincent's Healthcare. I'm sitting here with Dr. Raymond Pumarejo, and we've touched on a couple of topics with sleep, but there's still a bunch that we can get into. What about insomnia? I mean, that's when you just can't fall asleep. How big of a problem is that, and what's the leading cause of it?
Insomnia can be what we call acute insomnia. It could be related to an acute event in your life that leads to hyperarousal or being always awake, worrying, thinking, stressed, death of a family member. That's a temporary insomnia that it's understood naturally. And we address with it, you know, obviously dealing with the event is number one. Number two is occasionally we do have to use medications to deal with that acute insomnia. But chronic insomnia is a different beast because it's more difficult to handle. It first and foremost, we work on your sleep hygiene, all the habits that may be contributing to poor sleep quality. That's number one. Number two, a program that addresses chronic habits that people get into when they can't sleep is the most effective way to handle that. And there is something called chronic behavioral therapy for insomnia, CBTI, that's the most effective program. It can be done by a psychologist or a mental health specialist, or it could be done. There's some online programs now that work well and are reasonable in terms of their cost. So it is a difficult area to go. When we have an insomnia patient, we always try to address any issues that may be contributing to that insomnia. And if we find that it's chronic insomnia, then we have to handle it in a educated and long-term way to try to correct that pattern.
Well, now is a good time to take our next caller, Jerry at the Beaches. Jerry, you want to ask about weight loss and sleep?
Yes. Hey, doctor. My question for you is that I've been on a CPAP now for about 2 years, and honestly, I love it. I sleep so much better on it than I did before. I was having quite a few episodes during the course of a night before it. My question is, I'm about 80 pounds overweight, and I was 80 pounds. I'm on a diet right now, and I'm down to 60 pounds overweight, and I'm trying to get down to my goal weight. Have you seen patients who got on the weight loss regimen come off of a CPAP?
Yes, Jerry. You bring a few good points about sleep apnea and weight. It's not the sole cause, but it certainly makes it a lot worse, and in working on the weight loss will help it. The problem with the weight and sleep is that patients that are symptomatic with sleep apnea have a difficult time losing weight. Number one, they're always tired, so they can't really have the energy to exercise. Number two, sleep apnea, sleep deprivation, brings on some tendencies in our diet that are physiologic, they're hormonally based, where you actually have a difficult time to eat the right food for dieting. Your body craves carbohydrates for the most part. You tend to go for the wrong foods at the wrong time. So being treated like you are for sleep apnea is the first step in getting that energy you need to exercise and getting the ability to diet to lose the weight. And I can assure you that in many cases it helps the problem. It may not cure it, but it's the way to go, because the combination of heavy weight and sleep apnea challenges your body in many ways that promotes cardiovascular disease.
Thank you. I appreciate you answering my question.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Jerry. We appreciate it. Thanks, Jerry. We appreciate that. 340-1045 if you'd like to be on the program. We are talking all about sleep, and sleep apnea was one of the big topics that came up this section of the show. You know, I want to ask you, what are these sleep apnea machines? I'm unfamiliar with them. Are they common, though, or do a lot of people have these now, these machines that I guess that people have?
CPAP machines, which stands for continuous positive airway pressure, is essentially a machine. Nowadays, are much more compact than they used to be and quieter, that delivers positive pressure via a mask that may be in your nose or your entire face or the nose and mouth, and splints open the airway that obstructs during sleep when you're relaxed and sleeping. And that's really the main job of the positive airway pressure. And we have several methods to deliver that positive airway pressure. We have called continuous, which is CPAP. We have BiPAP, which when you exhale, the pressure automatically lowers. So if you have to deliver high positive airway pressure, many times patients have a hard time dealing with that exhalation through a lot of pressure coming at you. So the BiPAP helps with that, biphasic positive airway pressure.
So it helps with that pressure, the airway pressure.
Right.
Okay. We're coming up to a break here, so I just want to remind everybody, 340-1045, if you'd like to be a part of Ask the Doctor. Our guest of the day is Dr. Raymond Pumarejo with St. Vincent's, and we're talking about sleep today. We all do it, or at least we try to do it, so call on in with your questions. We'll take a short break. Be right back. Welcome back to Ask the Doctor. I'm Gene Wexler, and our guest today is Dr. Raymond Pumarejo with St. Vincent's, specifically St. Vincent's Lung, Sleep, and Critical Care Physicians. The topic of the day is sleep. And right now we're going to talk a little bit before the break. We have a short segment here. We're going to talk about the effects of sleep deprivation, what it could do to your body, which not good things.
So, Gene, sleep deprivation has several effects that can be very detrimental for your body. First of all, as I pointed before, one of the things that happens, you end up having stress hormones that are released, particularly in the setting of obstructive sleep apnea, that drive all the metabolic derangements that that person may have in terms of cardiovascular risk factors, diabetes or glucose control, cholesterol, hyperlipidemia, and high blood pressure is the other one that we see. So that in itself is another risk factor that promotes things like strokes and cardiovascular events or heart attacks. So that in itself, combined with the fact that your ability to control your weight and maintain healthy weight, and you can also have effects on your well-being in terms of affective disorders. Folks that have a tendency towards depression often will be depressed. Folks that are dealing with high-demand academic environments like studying, concentrating, all that goes down the wayside when you are sleep-deprived. And then the very dangerous one is driving. Sleepy driving or drowsy driving is as bad as drinking and driving. And actually, when you combine those two, is actually incredibly dangerous. So as you can imagine, sleep deprivation and not following that recommendation of trying to stick to that at the minimum 6, but ideally 7 to 9 hours for adults has many detrimental effects that shorten your life in a big way.
Is it more for kids too? Are they supposed to have more sleep or less sleep for kids?
Kids have a need for more sleep. Teenagers are going to be more in the range of 8 to 10 hours. So you can imagine that with our current environment, with electronics, cell phones, iPads, TVs, music, our kids and even our adults are not having enough time to sleep and get those 8 to 10 hours to maintain good physiologic health and being able to succeed in school.
Yeah, I've read articles recently that say if you look at your phone before bed, it can be detrimental.
Yes, the light that's produced by all those devices is entrained into your brain, and actually melatonin, some of the signal hormones that tell your brain to stay awake go on inappropriately when you're supposed to be drowsy and trying to fall asleep.
Okay. Well, we got a whole other half of the show left to talk about sleep. 340-1045. We're going to start taking your calls again on Ask the Doctor. Our topic today, again, is sleep or lack of sleep, sleep deprivation. It's something we all do, folks, so I hope more of you call in. I see Linda from St. Augustine. We're going to get to you after the break. We're going to talk a little bit more about insomnia, too. I'm Gene Wexler. You're listening to Ask the Doctor here on News 104.5. We're going to take a short break and be right back. All right, welcome back to Ask the Doctor. I'm Gene Wexler with WOKV. And with me here today is Dr. Raymond Pumarejo with St. Vincent's Lung, Sleep, and Critical Care Physicians. And today, we're talking about that second one in there, sleep. And we've talked a lot about sleep apnea, insomnia, the effects of lack of sleep, the amount of sleep that you're required to get. If you missed all that, you can go to WOKV.com and check out our Weekend Experts section, and we podcast all of these shows there. All right, we're going to hit the phones, too. 340-1045. Linda in St. Augustine has been waiting patiently to talk about insomnia. How's it going, Linda?
Hi, I'm doing okay, except for sleep. I'm 67 years old. I've had chronic insomnia for about 10 to 15 years. The bad news is I was on Ambien since 2003. The good news is it quit working, so I've been off of it for almost a year. But I can't sleep. I don't have. I've had a sleep study, and I don't have sleep apnea, by the way. But about the only thing that works is a Xanax, and I don't want to do that. I've tried under a doctor's care. Tried some alternative, like they had me on a pediatric dose of a couple of different old antidepressants that make you drowsy, but never drowsy enough for me to go to sleep. So I heard you mention CBTI, and I don't know what that is. Is there anything else that you can suggest that I might want to try?
Linda, hi. You know, I realize how frustrating it is to not be able to sleep. That I feel your pain.
Thank you.
I can tell you that as you pointed out, drugs, unfortunately, are not a good choice for chronic insomnia. The ones that you mentioned, Xanax, for example, is a drug that will develop a physical dependence over time. So tolerance, so you will be requiring higher and higher doses to get the effect.
That's a benzo, right?
That's a benzodiazepine,
okay.
Yes. Any type of benzodiazepine. And the other ones are good for short-term use, but they shouldn't be used long-term. And I think you probably have read a lot about sleep hygiene, so try to follow that.
I've done that. I go turn the lights down, read a book, you know, tell myself a story, sing a little song.
So you
all the good sleep hygiene things, but just nothing is working.
Yeah, it's a very challenging It's a very challenging condition. What I would recommend, and if you haven't, is certainly at least get a second opinion from a sleep physician, in the sense that make sure there's nothing else in your history or physical exam that would need to be explored to make sure it's not contributing to your lack of sleep or your inability to sleep.
What about thyroid?
Well, any type of thyroid disorder, particularly hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism, can contribute to sleep disorders. So many times those kind of disorders are screened, hopefully, by your primary care provider. But certainly that could be part of the problem. Now, CBTI or cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia is a program that can be carried out by a mental health specialist, psychologist. They are the ones that usually get the training and carry out the process. And over 6 to 8 sessions, they break apart some of the habits that you may have that may contribute to the same, to the hyperarousal. And also, they work on limiting the time that you spend in bed initially and avoid naps and things that may take away from the night sleep. And usually the studies have shown that is the most effective way to break a cycle of chronic insomnia, assuming that there's no other factors that have not been identified. So CBTI, there's some commercial products out there that can be done online, and there are several psychologists in our area that do offer it. And I think I would, if you're really interested in that, you in correcting the problem, that's where you need to go.
Is there a website for CBTI or a search engine that I can find a mental health professional that is trained in it?
Unfortunately, not something that we can, that provides ready information locally. You would have to, I think in general, my recommendation, again, is for you to get a second opinion from a sleep physician, and then from that point on, direct it. If you go to the National Sleep Foundation, they have some discussion about what CBTI is. And then you would have to essentially, through your sources, your sleep physician or your primary care physician, try to identify local providers that may help you with that. I don't think there's an easy site that you can go to and identify those names.
Thanks for calling in, Linda. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Linda from St. Augustine, 340-1045, if you would also like to call in. We got Patrick from the West Side. You want to talk about snoring?
Hi. Am I on?
You are on, Patrick.
Thank you. Okay. Hi, doctor, and thanks for your show. It's pretty interesting. I was just wondering, what happens with your heart when you're, I know your breathing increases right when you start to fall asleep, and a lot of times people kind of start to snore right then. It seems like it's a healthy moment there for your heart.
Patrick, do you have sleep apnea?
No, I don't think I have sleep apnea, but I've been having problems with my heart racing. And I noticed that seemed to help when that phase of sleep seemed to help my heart.
Yeah, so what I would encourage you to do is discuss your symptoms with your primary care provider, because, you know, heart racing at times, depending on the symptoms that are associated with me, may imply that you could have a rhythm problem with your heart. And that brings on the topic of atrial fibrillation, which is a very common cardiac condition where the atria, or the top chambers of the heart, are fibrillating in a regular way and driving your heart to be faster and irregular. And we often see patients that snore and have sleep apnea can, because of the stress hormones are released during those apnea episodes, that drives our heart to have irregular rhythms. So on the one hand, sleep is good for the heart, you know, as you pointed out, but at the same time, poor sleep or irregular sleep because of things like sleep apnea can contribute to cardiac disease directly.
Well, I guess I'm probably not phrasing the questions as well as I should, but it seemed to me like that phase, right when you're falling asleep, seem to heavily oxygenate the heart, or I mean, it just seems like it, but seems to help it, but.
You know, that I can't give you any physiologic explanation of that portion. I mean, I can tell you that in general, the sleeping, if you're tired, does bring in a more relaxed state in your body. So certainly we see lower heart rates when somebody is sleeping, particularly later in the night.
Thanks for calling in, Patrick. We appreciate it. 340-1045 if you want to be on the program. Our phones are lighting up this afternoon. Tom, you're driving on 95 South, traveling CPAP machine. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
Hey, great. What's your question for Dr. Pumarejo?
Real quick, like, whenever I'm traveling, I'm a day driver, but sometimes I have to spend the night out of town. And when I go on vacation with the family, I hate to have to drag the CPAP machine. Is there such thing as a traveling CPAP machine that will actually record your data that's being recorded on the home device and transferred back to the home device, so that way it shows that you're using the CPAP machine for the recommended six and a half hours, or is that totally a separate entity that can be purchased elsewhere?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no. I'm not aware of any system that allows you to combine data from two different devices into one, unless they can be kept in side by side records in the cloud of the manufacturer of that machine. But that's not done commonly. So you're really looking at a different machine. Now, the good news is that the new generation machines are smaller and easier to carry around. They're not as bulky as they used to be. They can be pretty much carried out on a small little carrying case. So that's the good news. They're quieter. They're easy to move around. But having a separate machine for those events for that time is not easy to keep the satisfying. Any data proof that you have to show that you're using the device.
Right. Being a truck driver, you when you go on for your DOT physical, and if you have a CPAP machine, then you have to have, I think it's 6 months of 80% usage, and of the 80% usage, it has to be at least 6 to 6.5 hours of continuous usage during that that time frame of 80%. So whenever I go out of town and have to spend a night out of town unannounced, then I don't have the CPAP machine with me, and it shows that I didn't use it for that time. Then pretty soon, if I have more trips, then I get kind of disqualified due to the fact that I'm not using a CPAP machine that is required by DOT. I was just wondering if there was a if I can purchase a separate machine to have in my big truck at all times, so that in case I do happen to have to spend a night, say, in Wilmington, Delaware, or down at Port Everglades, or anywhere, Tallahassee, or whatever, and would I be able to bring both machines into my sleep doctor and go, here's this from the house, and then here's this? Can you combine both charts?
Well, if that would happen to me, where you brought me two different downloads of data, I would certainly make a statement in my notes that would reflect that I have evidence that you've covered. And, you know, showing the two reports, I think it would make sense that would satisfy the need. It's a little bit more complicated, but it's doable in that sense.
A little more complicated, a little bit more expensive. What is the average CPAP running nowadays? Mine is about 4.5 years old.
I think after 5 years, most insurances will replace new equipment with updated, particularly because of the software updates and everything else.
Thank you, Tom, for calling in. 340-1045. These are some really good questions, too. I don't want this to sound like it's a joke, but where is Apple when you need them to design a sleep app, you know, a CPAP machine that would do that, right? I mean, that's a really great idea that Tom brought up there. why don't they have portable devices that will share information? Because you have Apple iPads will share information with the Apple laptops or home computers on a cloud network. I mean, is this we're speculating, but is this the future, you know, where we would actually have more machines like this that could share data?
And we now have more cloud-based data gathering for these newer machines. So I think it's a good question. I have to ask my sources of it, particularly if it's the same manufacturer, whether they can actually, in an easy way, combine the reports into one. And that's a good, excellent question. But it would probably have to be the same manufacturer, because each data point is coming into that one software for that manufacturer.
Okay. We have Henry from St. Augustine. You took a sleeping test and you had some questions for Dr. Pumarejo?
Yes, sir. Yeah, thank you. After about 5 years of using a BiPAP, I had two doctors this week for two different things. First was I've been waking up sleeping lousy, and it turns out I have lactose intolerance. So we've kind of taken care of that with diet and so forth. I also saw a sleep doctor looking at my last study saying that, you know, you've been diagnosed with mild sleep apnea, but it looks really that you don't have sleep apnea. It's probably the lactose problem that you've got that's been screwing up your sleep. It suggested, I try for a week or so of not using my machine. I started Tuesday, Wednesday. Boy, did I feel bad. But I'm feeling better some subsequent days. Is there a withdrawal kind of a thing, or what do you think?
No, from using the machine itself, the general feeling is that if you have disruptive sleep from a light form of sleep apnea, and it can be quite subtle where you don't have as many apneas or hypopneas, which are where we actually see airflow problems. There are some subtle ones called RIRAs that can disrupt your sleep, but they're very subtle. And, you know, it's been becoming more and more clear for all sleep physicians that those should be treated too. So I would certainly, if you feel that when you stop the CPAP machine, you are tired, that's a sign to me that you probably need to be treated. And you know, I would just, if you have doubts about that, get a second opinion. Okay.
Yeah, I am feeling better subsequent days. Last night I slept pretty well, and I feel a lot better today. That's why I was wondering if this will, you know, just fade away and where I won't need it anymore. Anyway, you're suggesting I should see somebody else again, though.
Well, you know, just raise the question. You can address it with the same sleep physician. But if it's not making sense to you, and make sure that it's not those subtle events that also should be treated, because they can affect the quality of sleep. But if you're actually feeling better, that might be a sign that indeed they overcalled your diagnosis, or that you've lost some weight and you had mild sleep apnea and now you're doing better.
Yeah.
Henry, thanks for calling in, Henry. Right, we appreciate it.
Thank you, bro.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. Bill, I know you're on the line there. You're stuck in that traffic jam that we're going to update. Hang on the line. We're going to get to your call and wrap up the show. We're talking about sleep with Dr. Raymond Pumarejo on Ask the Doctor. I'm Gene Wexler. Take a short break. Welcome back to Ask the Doctor. I'm WOKV's Gene Wexler, and I'm here with Dr. Raymond Pumarejo with St. Vincent's Healthcare. We're talking about sleep, and we just have a few minutes left here, so we're going to get right to it. Bill, you have been waiting patiently in that traffic jam. Man, how's it been going there?
Well, I got stopped at Alta, and I just crossed over Hector, so okay, I'm running about 2 miles an hour.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch. I'm 65 years old. In the latter part of October of this past year, I had, I believe it's called global transient amnesia. Spent 2 days in the hospital. They wired me for sight and sound, couldn't find any issues, both neurologically nor through my heart or anything like that. My wife has complained for years that I snore like a gravel truck riding down the road. Now, I have requested a sleep apnea study to see if that has any bearing on my issues. I have a very high-stress job. I run a small manufacturing facility. I'm up at 5 in the morning every morning. I go to bed at 8 at night every night, and I can go to sleep by simply flipping the light switch off. And, of course, I get up normally 1 to 2 times a night to hit the little boys' room, and when I get back to the bed, I'm sound asleep. My concern over a sleep apnea machine, if in fact it is determined that I have this issue, is that I also at night get extremely warm. And so I tend to roll in the bed to go to trying to find a cool spot in the bed. I'm not really waking up as much as I'm just rolling over and sound asleep. And at 5 o'clock, I wake up. I haven't had to use an alarm clock for 5 years now. But from 8 to 5, you can pretty much find me in bed, everything off, other than rolling and getting up in the middle of the night. My concern is that what happens when you start rolling at night and you've got all these tubes attached to you?
Bill, if you have sleep apnea, I imagine that during the daytime you may be more fatigued than you should be for those 8 or 9 hours that you do to maintain good, healthy sleep. But one of the things that we see with sleep apnea treatment is that the patients tend to roll less and move less because they are deeper sleepers now that they have the problem corrected by the CPAP machine. The other issue, the other savior that we have is the fact that that newer mask interfaces, we call it, are designed in a way that are less intrusive, and they have some features that make it easier for you to roll without knocking them out. And we also have pillows that are called CPAP pillows that have the shape so that if your headgear, if you turn to one side or the other, you actually do not knock out the equipment.
Hey, Bill, I'm putting you on hold here, so if you want to ask the doctor one more quick question after the show's over, you can. That's it, though. I knew this would happen, too, Dr. Raymond Pumarejo, because it's such a common topic, and everybody has, you know, different problems with sleep that they're dealing with. We could talk for 3 hours on this, but unfortunately, we can only talk for one today. Go to WOKV.com, look under the Weekend Experts section to check out...